The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I pay for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole Cole.
All right. We are starting, for the live program, we're starting a couple of minutes early. So if you found us at 9 minutes till 3 o'clock, thanks for being here early. For everyone else, you know, if you listen on the podcast or if you listen on Progressive Voices, all will be as it normally is. So I guess I don't even need to embellish that. Anyway, here we are. Wow, how things change, right? This time, well, not this time, last night and this morning when we awoke, we figured it was all over but the crying, that things were going to end today in the Senate impeachment trial of Donald Trump. Because we heard last night, well, you know what? I should go into the news. I'm trying to figure out the best way to do this because there's so much going on. Let me tell you, today's show is a busy one. We've got Ellie Mastal, actually a conversation we recorded a few hours ago, and we joked. I made no secret of the fact that we were taping it in the morning because I said anything and everything could change by the time this airs. And yes, a lot has changed. We'll get into all of it. And then Lisa Graves will join us for the last half hour or so of the program. And Lisa is a brilliant woman. She is a great legal mind as well. She is a veteran of the Department of Justice under Bill Clinton, where she was an assistant deputy attorney general. She was the chief counsel for the Senate Judiciary Committee when it was chaired by Patrick Leahy. Her experience is monumental. She has been quiet for the past week because she's been dealing with, she was sick and under doctor's orders where she couldn't talk. So today she's finally able to talk and she'll share with us her thoughts on everything that's going on. But let's start with the news, shall we? And I won't even do it live. I won't even play the recorded. I'll bring as much to you live as I can. And again, so much has changed since this morning. I guess we should begin with the latest bombshell. Yes, we knew there would be another bombshell. And sure enough, we wondered, would it be John Bolton? More of him? Is he going to stand by idly and watch as the Senate shirks its responsibility and goes forth and makes this into a sham of an impeachment trial and calls no witnesses? Well, somehow, Maggie Haberman and Michael Schmidt at the New York Times got another scoop 2 hours ago. Trump told Bolton to help his Ukraine pressure campaign, book says, reads the headline. And let me just read to you from the New York Times. More than 2 months before he asked Ukraine's president to investigate his political opponents, President Trump directed John Bolton, then his national security advisor, to help with his pressure campaign to extract damaging information on Democrats from Ukrainian officials, according to an unpublished manuscript by Mr. Bolton. Quote, Mr. Bolton gave the instruction, Mr. Bolton wrote, during an Oval Office conversation in early May that included... that's my drum roll because I don't have one handy. Ready? That included the acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, the president's personal lawyer Rudolph Giuliani, and the White House counsel Pat Cipollone, who is now leading the president's impeachment defense. I want that to sink in. Mulvaney, Giuliani, and Cipollone were all in the room when Trump told Bolton, directed him, as something that Jason Leopold reported months ago and was, you know, raked over the coals for. Well, he's been vindicated. Directed him. Trump directed him to set up a meeting with, here, let me just finish. Mr. Trump told Mr. Bolton to call Volodymyr Zelensky, who had recently won election as president of Ukraine, to ensure Mr. Zelensky would meet with Mr. Giuliani, who was planning a trip to Ukraine to discuss the investigations that the president sought in Mr. Bolton's account. Mr. Bolton never made the call, he wrote. And so Adam Schiff began today's arguments, which were ostensibly about the, whether or not to call witnesses, with that information. Here's a little bit of it.
Today we were greeted to yet another development in the case when the New York Times reported with a headline that says, Trump told Bolton to help his Ukraine pressure campaign, book says. The president asked his national security advisor last spring in front of other senior advisors to pave the way for a meeting between Rudolph Giuliani and Ukraine's new leader. According to the New York Times, more than 2 months before he asked Ukraine's president to investigate his political opponents, President Trump directed John R. Bolton, then his national security advisor, to help with his pressure campaign to extract damaging information on Democrats from Ukrainian officials, according to an unpublished manuscript by Mr. Bolton.
All right, it goes on from there. I'm not going to play the whole thing just because we're rushed for time. And actually, I started the show five minutes ago, almost 10 minutes early. I should have started it earlier still because we've got a lot of territory to cover. So here's what's going on. They're on a 30-minute break. That'll give us time to listen to the interview I recorded this morning with Ellie Mistal, to bring us sort of to where we are now. And then on the other side, we'll go back to the hearing. We'll check in and out of it live along with Lisa Graves, who will fill us in on the background and what we're seeing and answer the myriad of questions I certainly have for her. So anyway, let's not waste any time. Let's get right to Ellie Mistal. I got to apologize to the YouTubers because I got dressed. I put on makeup this morning because we recorded it at 10 a.m. So I would have video to go with it because I know you YouTubers like to watch. but you know, I'm on the new computer now and I had old settings and I had it saving the video to a location that doesn't exist. So the video didn't save. Thankfully, I was recording audio separately, so we have that. So apologies to those of you who like to watch. Anyway, you'll get to just stare at the picture of Ellie Mistal's lovely face and beautiful afro. All right. Take it away, Nicole. I'm honored and sort of upset at the same time to welcome our next guest to the program. Ellie Mistal is the newly named justice correspondent for The Nation, covering the courts, criminal justice system, and politics. And by the way, I should mention that given the ever-fluid nature of news these days, that we're recording this Friday morning at 10 Eastern. And I point that out because the way things are going, everything could change the minute we hang up. But Ellie, as we begin talking today, how are you feeling this morning?
Yeah, I'm devastated, somewhat obviously, but not surprised, which is a weird feeling, right? Like the outcome that was always most likely, the level of corruption and cowardice that we would see from the Republican Party was always the most likely answer, and yet it's still crushing to see, right? It's a bit like, you know, watching a tragedy. You know how it's going to end because it always ends the same way, but it's still heart-wrenching, you know, it's still heart-wrenching to watch, you know, Cleopatra put the asp into her chest, right? Like,
right.
You, it's the death is still affects you, and that's kind of where I am.
Yeah,
As you point out, it's 10 o'clock.
Right.
Who knows where we are, you know, by 1 o'clock? Who knows
we
where
know
we are
now.
By 3 o'clock? I mean, there are still shoes to drop. And I do think that, not so much a level of hope, but one thing that I think that everybody has to understand, Trump Republicans included, is that there's more dirt on this corrupt king you have elected that will just continue to come out.
Exactly. And that's the thing that, I mean, I can't imagine how they can wear these blinders. They have to know. The book, granted it may be tied up in the courts beyond the publication date of March 17th, but these stories will come out. Look, I never thought I'd look at John Bolton as the guy who's going to set things straight in this country. I mean, talk about twisted logic, but it sounds like he wants to tell the truth. He wants to let everybody know what this president has done and is capable of doing, and I don't think he's going to be silenced. The problem is it'll come after the formal impeachment proceedings are done. So where do we go from there?
I mean, quite clearly, the Republicans are just responding to the short-term danger, right? And the short-term danger is, as allegedly a Trump aide said, people who cross Trump will have their heads on pikes. That is the danger that they are most concerned about right now. And tomorrow's danger, that they'll look like fools, that they'll look complicit, that they will look like cowards, well, that's just something they'll have to deal with tomorrow. Like, they are so wrapped up into this world where Trump, I mean, again, I keep going back to this word cowardice, and I don't even mean it as an invective. I mean it as an accurate description of where these people are, right? Like, they are afraid of Donald Trump, and they are more afraid of Donald Trump than anything else. They're more afraid of Donald Trump than the actual voters. They're more afraid of Donald Trump than history. They're more afraid of Donald Trump than ruining the country. They would rather ruin the country than cross Donald Trump. That's how scared they are.
It's inconceivable. I mean, literally inconceivable that so many senators would allow themselves to be basically blackmailed in this respect, where if they put up a unified front, if a half a dozen of them got together and said, you know what, we're going to stand for what's right, we're going to stand for the Constitution, we're going to stand for country over party, they could make a move, but they won't. In fact, last night, so Eli Mistal, I got to say, as much as I'm loving reading you in The Nation regularly now, anybody who's not following your Twitter feed and hasn't been over the course of this impeachment trial has really been missing out, because you deserve an award for, have you watched every moment of these proceedings?
I have watched this gavel to gavel. I need to go to the dentist. I think I have ground my teeth into serious problems. I probably need a new prescription on my glasses, but I have watched gavel to gavel.
And we thank you for it, because you've made the sacrifice that many of us couldn't. At ELIENYC is Eli Mistal's Twitter account, which you should be following. So you've provided just nonstop commentary for those of us who couldn't stay glued to the proceedings the entire time. Were you surprised at the end of yesterday's, the day two of the question and answer session, that Lamar Alexander, who all the TV pundits were saying, he's the guy to watch because he's retiring, he could do the right thing here. So he released a statement in 15 tweets on Twitter, basically saying, yeah, he's guilty. We know he's guilty. The House managers proved beyond a shadow of a doubt he's guilty. But we're not going to, we don't need to hear anymore because we know he's guilty, but it's not impeachable anyway. What?
They adopted this wackadoodle argument surfaced by Professor Alan Dershowitz in the criminal defense of Donald Trump. And that wackadoodle argument is that abuse of power is not impeachable. He's just wrong. And that it's not impeachable because a president's motives can never be questioned so long as the president or any politician believes that they are acting in the public interest. And, of course, their re-election is a legitimate thing for them to believe is in the public interest. It is not just, I'm using wackadoodle to try to emphasize how crazy and rejected this theory is. Nobody credible agrees with Alan Dershowitz on this point, except for apparently the entire Republican Party. Like, that's how insane this is. It's almost like, I mean, the best way I can put it is getting mortgage advice from a homeless man.
Yeah. Right.
And then going to, you know, JP Morgan Chase and being like, I've been told that if I pay you $5, I get to have this house for 30 years mortgage free. Like, it's insane. But the Republican Party and Lamar Alexander, specifically in his tweet storm, have adopted this ridiculous legal argument, hook, line, and sinker, because it gets them what they want. And what they want is to not cross Donald Trump.
It's amazing. And it's just because, like, Lamar Alexander, he's an elderly man. He's retiring. Is he so...
He's 79!
Right! So it's not like
there
he's...
People who are out here saying, like, oh, he's got to consider his future.
What
he's
future?
79!
Right, exactly.
My kid's 7! Could we consider his future
please.
Maybe for a second?
Yes.
Like, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, please do. We're here to hear. I mean, you're saying what I'm thinking. I mean, my kid's 20. All I could think was, at least I'm old. I'm not going to be around that much longer. But I have a kid. Her future is ahead of her. You have a 7-year-old. My goodness, what does this portend for the future?
I mean, again, they don't. And so this is another point that I think it's hard for liberals to hear because it sounds so dark. But I am not wrong.
No.
The reason the arguments don't work, that, oh, well, if you do this for a Republican president, what's going to happen when there's a Democratic president? The reason why that argument doesn't work on Republicans is because Republicans believe that they are on the cusp of installing one-party rule. Okay, like, their actions over the past generation, and certainly accelerating from Bush v. Gore on, have all been towards establishing minority white rule in a majority-minority country going forward. That is their plan.
Right.
So they don't plan to have to worry about what they'll do if there's a Democratic president who acts like this, because they don't intend for there to be a Democratic president who acts like this, because they don't intend to allow Democrats to be elected anymore. That is the point of all the gerrymandering. That is the point of all the voter suppression. That is the point of the Electoral College, to keep Democrats out of power forever from their perspective, right? Point number two, and this, I want to focus people on the very last question that Republicans asked, because it gave away the whole game. Senator Mike Braun from Indiana, where I lived for 13 months and 9 days. I wasn't counting, like 13 months, 9 days, about 8 hours.
I gotcha. I had a stint in New Mexico like that, so I understand fully. It was four months for me, but yeah.
Senator Mike Braun from Indiana, his last question was basically, well, shouldn't Joe Biden be impeached for his, you know, involvement in the Burisma scandal?
Oh,
now,
God.
Hey, Joe Biden's not the president, so shut up. But and the answer from Trump's lawyers, who spent, you know, 18 hours surfacing this wackadoodle legal theory that Trump can't be impeached for abuse of power, said yes. In fact, under their theory, Joe Biden absolutely could be impeached for Burisma, because Joe Biden was doing it for money, which he wasn't, and there's no evidence of that, and whatever. But it gives away the whole game. If the Democrats are in power, the Republicans will just impeach them. They do not care. They do not care about the hypocrisy of it.
No.
They do not care about the legal precedent of it. They will just impeach them if they can. If the Republicans are in the position where they have enough votes to impeach a Democratic president for anything, they will do that, because they do not believe that Democrats have an equal right and opportunity to rule as they do. That is their plan.
It's astounding. I mean, I've been rendered speechless so often over the last week and a half that it's unlike me, because I usually have something to say, right or wrong. I've got some response, and I found myself tongue-tied because I can't believe what is happening here. Quick aside, just you mentioned wackadoodle Alan Dershowitz and his ridiculous arguments, which then he went on TV yesterday blasting everyone for, you know, misrepresenting what he said. It was carried live. We heard what he said. You're a graduate, Ellie Mistal, of Harvard Law School. Does Harvard need to come out and disown Alan Dershowitz? Would they?
I've had Dershowitz. I've had him for a seminar.
Yeah,
my wife had him for criminal law.
Oh my goodness!
I know the guy.
Right?
There's an aspect that's actually kind of heartbreaking to watch him do this. But I will say, it kind of tracks with his whole career. There's, you know, it's like New Yorkers. Like, people outside of New York will all be like, oh, Rudy Giuliani, when did he go crazy? And New Yorkers are like, nah, he's always been like, yeah, really, y'all? Yeah. He's always been like this. It's kind of Dershowitz, right? Like, he didn't just suddenly go crazy. His entire legal career is, a good friend of mine on Twitter puts it, he is a criminal defense fabulist. Like, his entire career has been to just invent full cloth, ridiculous theories of criminal defense because it tickles his brainy parts. And so that's what he was doing again today. It would be weird for Harvard to disown him now because he hasn't actually said anything. What's the word I'm looking for? It's not like he's broken type, right? Like he's always been this guy who will say anything, fair, unfair, legal, illegal, ethical, unethical. He does not care. He will always say whatever he thinks he can to help his clients. He actually, Tim Wu, who is a professor at Columbia Law School and was a one-time lieutenant governor candidate here in New York State, he put on Twitter, he also had Dershowitz for criminal law, and he pointed out how, he had Dershowitz for ethics.
And isn't it ironic?
He talked about how Dershowitz, in his ethics class, would teach that if you are zealously defending your client, there is no ethical bar. Anything you do in zealous defense of your client is ethical. Now, that is not how most people teach ethics.
No.
And Harvard has been letting him teach ethics this way for, 30, 40 years. So it would be weird now for Harvard to be like, man, well, now he's just nutsy. Like, no, they've allowed this guy to, he's always been like this at some level. It's just a question of, are the cameras actually paying attention to what this man is saying?
Wow. Everything is upside down. I call it opposite world, where nothing, in is out, up is down, left is right. Although in this case, right is insane.
Right is so wrong.
Right is completely wrong. So here we are again. It's Friday morning. The latest we know is that Lamar Alexander says no need for more witnesses. We know he's guilty, but yeah, so what? Well, it's okay. We'll let the voters decide in November because I don't know why. We hear Susan Collins.
Then Trump can steal it.
Right. Susan Collins then comes out immediately after Lamar Alexander and says, I'm going to vote for witnesses. Right. Mighty courageous of her to come out when it really doesn't mean anything at that point. Because what happens is, even if Lisa Murkowski and Mitt Romney vote to call for witnesses, that in the best case scenario would make a 50-50 tie. Everyone's saying John Roberts, although he should step in and be the tiebreaker, won't go there because, what, he's got no balls. A tie means no witnesses call. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, a tie goes to the Republicans unless Roberts breaks the tie. Now, Roberts, I believe, is empowered to break the tie. Mm-hmm. I believe that would be well in keeping with the Senate rules and procedures. He is, in fact, the presiding officer of the Senate during the impeachment trial, when, in a normal Senate hearing, the vice president is the presiding officer of the Senate, and he can break ties. But Roberts can also, relatively credibly, argue that, no, it's not his place to break ties at all. And because we know two things, Roberts likes to keep the court and the theory of the court out of the political fray, A. B, Roberts is a Republican.
That's right.
So when you put those two things together, and when you realize that a tie goes to the Republicans, the most likely thing is that Roberts will not take a vote at all, claim that he is not doing it because he has some kind of higher objective legal purpose, and still get his goal of helping the Republicans do what they want. So it's kind of in for Roberts if he doesn't vote, whereas if he does vote to break the tie either way, then he loses the protection of he was just doing the minimalist version possible, and actually has to get the ire of whatever side is disappointed in his ruling. So I don't think that John Roberts would save us. I don't think he will save us, mm-hmm. because John Roberts doesn't believe in saving the country. He believes in saving his own reputation.
Wow. But one could argue that this will not save his reputation. It will enshrine him as a partisan hack who allowed a criminal president to keep running scams on the nation.
But, I mean, does he care? Because he's already enshrined that
right,
way
exactly.
amongst
yeah.
progressives who care, right?
Right.
Like John Roberts lost all pretension to not a political hack when he randomly decided to end racism in the South and eviscerate the Voting Rights Act. And it
That's
is the
true.
Evisceration mm-hmm. of that Voting Rights Act that is one of the proximate causes for Trump's election in the first freaking place, right?
So exactly.
People like me are already like, you know, Roberts can go jump in a lake. He doesn't really care about people like me. Other Republicans will, you know, parrot the like, well, he was a constitutionalist who did the right thing. And that's what they'll say, and that's all he cares about because, like, that's who he hangs out with at dinner parties. So there's no, you know, one of the things that I've written in The Nation is that we have to understand that the sins that Republicans are committing right now, the hypocrisy, the dissembling, the deceit, these sins are not crimes. They are social sins, right? And thus, they only have consequences within a community. Republicans are happy to live outside of that community in their own kind of gated world, right? So they are not subject to shame or derision.
Huh.
Because they don't live in the world with the rest of us. They're not in polite society. They're in Republican society. So, like, one of the things that I've written that should and will be shamed forever, perhaps in the pages of the New York Times, don't worry, they will still have opportunities to go Dancing with the Stars. Right? Like, there is a whole other, like, horrible Republican society that will still embrace these people and love these people and give these people TV shows on Fox News and give these, bring them on and guests on podcasts. Mm. Like, there's a whole ecosystem of Republicans.
Yeah.
Always.
Oh, God. Ellie Mastal is with us. And I got to ask you, I noticed your reaction on Twitter following what I thought might have been the most provocative question yesterday, and it came from Elizabeth Warren. Let me just play the question because I want to get your reaction to it. At first, I honestly didn't know how to react. Here's what happened yesterday.
The question from Senator Warren is for the House managers. At a time when large majorities of Americans have lost faith in government, does the fact that the Chief Justice is presiding over an impeachment trial in which Republican senators have thus far refused to allow witnesses or evidence contribute to the loss of legitimacy of the Chief Justice, the Supreme Court, and the Constitution?
Whoa. Now, if looks could kill, there were daggers coming out of Chief Justice John Roberts' eyes. Now, because the way the cameras were placed, I couldn't tell if he was looking directly at Elizabeth Warren. I think he probably was. Okay. So, whoa. So what happened there?
So Liz Warren apparently has balls or ovaries of steel, if whatever you want to call it, right? Like, she is fresh out of F's to give.
That's right.
And so she threw major league shade right at Roberts and made him read the damn question himself.
Oh, yeah.
What she was saying in that question, stripped of all kind of politeness, was that Warren's playing a long game there. She understands that, she understood then when she asked that question that it was as likely as not that we would end up in a 50-50 tie situation about this witness question, right? And she threw shade right at Roberts saying, if you do not vote for witness, how can people view you as a legitimate judge, right?
Yeah.
Which is a totally fair question,
absolutely.
Right? For him to think. That's why his face was all, like, pissy.
Yeah.
Like, he just, like, you know, sucked on a lemon.
Yes.
But that is the operative question. Liz Warren was doing the work of reminding John Roberts that the entire nation will be watching him when he also helps the Republicans cover up the information about Donald Trump in John Bolton's book. That's what she was doing, right? And I thought she did it.
I'm sorry, you thought she did it how?
Takes some level of just, not just brilliantly, but also like, it just straight up takes some level of like chutzpah.
Chutzpah.
To make the man, you know, to do it in the form that she did it. Now, will it affect Roberts? Probably not, because you know what? He's appointed for life and he knows it.
Yeah.
Like he knows he is beyond accountability from anybody. And there is also and as I pointed out on Twitter, there's also the fun that, let's not forget, if Elizabeth Warren should win the presidency and put forward any of her great plans or whatever, John Roberts is going to be sitting there with a conservative majority on the Supreme Court waiting to knock all of them down. right? You're not getting, and it's something that I've told progressives a lot, just in the lead up to the election. I mean, technically Iowa is like, what, tomorrow or some shit?
Monday, yeah. It's coming up on us. Right? Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
But like, one of the things that I've been warning progressives is that, like, look, I like these plans too, but the Supreme Court is a thing. And if you don't have a plan for court packing or court reform in some way, all that's going to happen is that you're going to pass all these bills, and a 5-4 conservative majority on the Supreme Court is going to call them unconstitutional. Remember,
right.
Obamacare is only a thing because Roberts changed it.
Yes.
You know, to make it a thing. He easily could have struck Obamacare down. He still might strike Obamacare down as there are new challenges to that.
That's right.
And certainly when we get into questions of Medicare for all or ending private insurance, any kind of gun legislation, the Supreme Court will be sitting there as a block on all of these plans. And, you know, throwing a little bit of shade at, you know, John Roberts is not a petty man. I mean, I say a lot of negative things about Roberts. He is not a petty man, so mm-hmm. I do not believe that any of this will truly affect his decision. But, you know, being nice to Roberts is kind of a thing you might want to be if you were really hoping to be president.
Right. I mean, I thought it was counterproductive. I mean, I applauded her question. I was like, yeah, you go, girl. And then I thought, is this smart? I don't know. Now, Ellie Mistal, you brought up the idea of court packing, and that's something that Elizabeth Warren has said she's in favor of. Bernie Sanders has said he's not. For those who don't understand, with the Republicans having such a majority for generations, at least a generation to come, on the Supreme Court, some have advocated for increasing the number of justices on the court, which is something that a Democratic president could do if we indeed ever get another Democratic president. Is that something you think is a good idea?
I'm a huge fan of court packing.
Ah.
And I'm a huge court packing guy, and I'm not just like we should add one or two. I'm saying we should add 10.
We should blow
the lid off of this thing. And I have a couple of reasons for that. One is just the straight up, like, if we don't, the Republicans just win.
Right.
Right? Like, there's a real politic aspect to my support for court packing. But the second reason is truly out of a court reform kind of perspective. One of the problems we have with the Supreme Court right now, I believe, not that the Supreme Court has too much power. I actually think the Supreme Court, unlike some court reformers, I think the Supreme Court actually has the right amount of power as an institution. The problem is that each individual justice has too much power because there are so few of them. Right? So that if one justice randomly dies here or there, if one has a heart attack eating a steak sandwich, if another gets cancer, if another gets hit by a bus, it massively changes the political course of the nation, depending on who happens to be president and in control of the Senate at that time. It would actually be, at this point, political malpractice for the party out of the White House, but in control of the Senate, to not do everything possible to stop the confirmation of a justice who was against their politics, because that justice will wield power against their political agenda for the next 20, 30, 40 years, right?
Right.
So that goes to this aspect that each individual judge in our country, if you blew the court up from 9 to, say, 19, to, say, 21, which is how, like, the California Court of Appeals works, right?
Uh-huh.
Then over the fullness of time, you would kind of expect things to work themselves out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So while the court as an institution would still have a whole lot of power, the death of any one particular judge at any one particular time would not be the kind of thing that could massively change the course of our politics. I mean, right now, a woman's right to choose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the basic right to choose, a woman's right to birth control. I keep tying this because people forget just how crazy these Republicans are. It's not just that they're anti-abortion. Most of them are anti-birth control. A woman's right to reproductive choice rests entirely on the shoulders of an 86-year-old three-time cancer survivor.
Yeah, that's right.
That is who Ruth Bader Ginsburg is, mm-hmm. and that is how close we are to losing these rights. So that shouldn't be. Right, like that, just like no woman should have that much power. No justice should have that much responsibility. Right?
Yeah, I hear you. You've convinced me.
And the way to relieve her burden is to add 10, 12, 13 more judges, more justices, so that if Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, wanted to retire and spend her last days with her family,
yes,
she wouldn't have to be trying to time the entire thing out to make sure there wasn't a crazy Republican in office at the time.
I hear you. I love the argument, and it's the best way I've heard it put. So thank you for that, Ellie Mistal. All right, I could talk to you for hours, and I know you don't have hours to spend. The Senate's going to reconvene. We're talking now. It's 10:29 Eastern time, Friday morning. And in a few hours, what's going to happen is they will reconvene. They will spend 4 hours allegedly debating the question of whether or not to allow witnesses and documents entered in a trial, go figure. And then they'll vote on it. Some of the predictions are this is going to go well into the wee hours of tomorrow morning. Do you hold out any hope that somebody is going to come forward and the right thing will be done here?
I mean, I always have hope, I think. My best thoughts of hope are that Richard Burr of North Carolina is a national security hawk.
Yeah. Chair of the Intelligence Committee.
That Lamar Alexander explained Trump's obvious crimes. Alexander explained that their obvious crimes are they're not impeachable. I don't know that Burr agrees with that. And if Burr does think that these obvious crimes have happened, maybe he vote for witnesses to hear more information. I don't have a lot of hope with that because, again, Richard Burr is a Republican and he's a Senate chairman and he needs McConnell to continue backing him. And North Carolina is not at all a safe state. So, you know, I don't have a lot of hope, but there's Burr.
Right.
And then, you know, there's also the chance that John Roberts, you know, with the fastball, with the shade from Elizabeth Warren, mm-hmm. really does think a little bit more of about his legacy. It would be so easy for him to actually gain points with Democrats and progressives who think he is a Republican plant if he voted for witnesses, so that when later he votes to take away women's rights or take away LGBTQ rights or take away minority rights, when he does those things, which he absolutely will still do when he gets back to the Supreme Court, at least people won't be able to so easily say, like, see, he's just a Republican.
Right.
Like, if it buys him a little bit of intellectual credibility if he votes for witnesses. So there's still a chance that he will, I guess I still hold out a little bit of a hope of a chance that he might do that.
Okay. And
Gandalf would say it's a fool's hope.
Right. It's our last best hope. I gotcha. Now, last question. Say he doesn't come through. He does what you would expect of a Republican in today's world. Where do we go tomorrow? What happens next?
Well, they don't vote for witnesses. Trump wants this wrapped up by the Super Bowl so that he can have a Super Bowl interview. I don't know if they will burn the midnight oil to both vote against witnesses and acquit him tonight.
Yeah.
They might push the actual acquittal vote till Monday, but it'll be done before he will be acquitted. That is what they want. That is what they will get.
And what do we do?
I mean, what can we do but vote?
Vote.
What can we do but vote in an election that they are trying to steal? What can we do other than have overwhelming, obvious turnout so when they try to steal the election, they still can't? So when he tries to stay in office after losing the election, he is forced out. All we can do is vote.
And vote
blue no matter who. Like, I think one of the only silver linings, ray of hopes that I can see from this experience is that, you know, while we haven't been focusing on the Democratic primary, before impeachment happened, before the trial started, the Democratic primary was starting to fray at the edges in terms of, like, some real backbiting and infighting and ugliness amongst the candidates.
Yeah.
I hope that this experience reminds every Democrat, regardless of who you support, that you're voting for the damn nominee. I don't want to hear about your personal petty bullcrap.
Yep.
You're voting for the damn nominee in November because that's the only way to stop this crazy man. And I hope that there is a chance of this impeachment. You know, everybody, if you go back to like November 9th, 2016, everybody was so crushed, so devastated, so just, you know, hopeless, right? But Trump gets normalized. This crap gets normalized, and you start to, like, have coping mechanisms and learn how to deal with it in some way. And once you get those, that armor and those coping mechanisms, it's kind of easy to go back into your own pettiness and be like, I don't like candidates from Indiana, you know, or whatever it is, right? Like,
right.
You can, it's easy to do that. I hope this reminds people of what we're actually fighting, right? And we're, and that the person that we're fighting is not Bernie Sanders. It's not Buttigieg. It's not Medicare for, it's not some policy that I don't like. That's not who we're fighting. We're fighting a criminal bigot, misogynist, sexual predator. That's who we're fighting, and the Republicans are willing to do anything to keep him in power. And so we have to be willing to do anything, which includes vote for people that I may not otherwise like.
That's right.
To get him out of power.
That's right. Ellie Mistal, you are the best. Thank you to the nation for hiring you. You're awesome. Everyone needs to follow you on Twitter and read you at the Nation. Ellie Mistal, thank you so much. Thank you for doing the work you do, and thank you for sharing some of your time with us. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Nicole. You have a great one.
You too. Bye-bye. Ellie Mistal, he really is a gem. He's as funny as he is knowledgeable, which makes him so entertaining. If you're just joining us, that was Ellie Mistal, a conversation we recorded this morning, because if you're not following Ellie on Twitter, you should be. He's been live tweeting the entire impeachment trial. He has watched gavel to gavel. He's got a stronger constitution than I do in many respects. So, all right, here we are. I'm Nicole Sandler. Thank you for being with us. In just a moment, we're going to get Lisa Graves on the line, and I'm going to let Lisa explain to you her background and why I was so anxious to have her on the show. As I mentioned at the beginning, she's been battling a throat infection, and she was under doctor's orders to be quiet so far throughout the entire impeachment trial. She's a fairly regular guest of Lawrence O'Donnell's on The Last Word, but she hasn't been able to do anything. So now that she's got the doctors okay to speak, she'll join us in just a moment. Just checking, it looks like the Senate is still on their recess. Yeah, they're not back yet. Before we get Lisa, you know, we didn't start with any funny, and I thought I'd send you this. I haven't played much audio from any of the Republican members of Donald Trump's legal team, just because it's all infuriating. But Boca Brittany Summers sent me a little bit she put together using the exact audio from one of Pam Bondi's presentations. Pam Bondi, in case you're not familiar, was Florida's attorney general under Rick Scott. Donald Trump bought her off in the Trump University lawsuit by giving her a huge campaign donation. And then she mysteriously all of a sudden dropped, you know, the Florida's part of the lawsuit, go figure. And now she's on his impeachment team. So she got up the other day and did a presentation, and somebody in a tweet that went viral said, Pam Bondi should learn not to go on the Senate floor after taking such a big bong hit. So here's Pam Bondi, just a minute of her presentation from the other day, because you need to hear it. This, and just know, her audio has not been edited at all. This is as it happened live on the Senate floor.
As far as we know, Hunter Biden has said he, quote, attended a couple board meetings. We know that he did involving Burisma and Zolchevsky. The Norway trip was June of 2015.
Okay.
He remained on the board.
Okay. She's turning pages now. Oh my God. Florida woman. All right, let's not wait any longer. Senate still not back in session. Let's bring Lisa Graves on the line. Lisa, how's the voice?
Oh, Nicole, thank you for having me. I'm a little squeaky, but it's nice to be speaking again.
Oh, it's so nice to hear you. Now, I tried to figure out how to identify you on the Chyron, that, you know, for on YouTube, and I just wrote legal expert, DOJ veteran, but you've actually worked for every branch of the government as a legal mind, right?
I did. I was a senior advisor in all three branches of the federal government, and I turned down an offer to go work in the White House counsel's office also, but I was Deputy Assistant Attorney General at the Justice Department in the Office of Policy Development or Legal Policy. I was the Chief Counsel for Nominations for the Senate Judiciary Committee for Senator Leahy when he was Chairman and then Ranking Member. And I was the Deputy Chief of the Article III Judges Division for the United States Courts for the Administrative Office there, helping all the lifetime appointed judges in the country.
Wow. So you must, your head must be spinning from the judges that have been appointed during Donald Trump's term that Mitch McConnell has rammed through the Senate, huh?
Well, it's shocking to see so many unqualified, patently unqualified people being put forth for lifetime positions on our federal courts. People who have very little trial experience, who are presiding over trials, people who have experience predominantly as bloggers, people who've been rated not qualified by right. all or some of the members of the ABA, American Bar Association Review Committee. Trump has really drawn from the bottom of the barrel, and McConnell has been willing to install those people on the courts to try to advance their right-wing political agenda rather than to advance the actual rule of law and the defense of the Constitution. Of course, that's to be expected from McConnell, given his track record of hostility toward our constitutional rights.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, I should also let listeners know that aside from after your work in government, you've been an activist, you've been a researcher, you headed up the Center for Media and Democracy, which is the group that exposed ALEC. ALECExposed.org is one of the websites. In fact, they're back in the news again today with another story. You've been doing great public advocacy work all these years, and so it's great to have your input on so many different levels, Lisa Graves. I guess they're still on a break. I should ask you what your thoughts are this morning about the impeachment trial so far. Are you as in disgust as I am at the way it's gone?
Well, it's a sham. It's a travesty. And I am disgusted. I think millions of Americans are disgusted that these majority senators are refusing to have witnesses at a trial. You can't really call it a trial if there aren't witnesses. What it really is an effort to try to, quote, exonerate, unquote, Trump so he can walk around and claim he was exonerated in this fake trial in which he blocked witnesses from testifying, and he was aided by the most base and partisan members of the legislature in thwarting the trial. I think back on our history and the sort of 18-minute gap in the Watergate tapes. This is so much more than an 18-minute gap. This is a multi-witness suppression by this president, aided and abetted by those senators, and they will go down in history for this travesty, this sham, this assault on the rule of law. Unfortunately, justice is not as swift as some of us would like.
No, it isn't. Now, I'm sure you've heard the news. The New York Times broke a story around noon Eastern time today. More from John Bolton's forthcoming book. This one, he says that this all began earlier than we'd previously been told, that in fact, John Bolton's book tells the story of a meeting in front of other senior advisors, including Mick Mulvaney, Rudolph Giuliani, who is not actually a senior advisor, doesn't work for the administration, allegedly, and White House counsel Pat Cipollone, in which Trump gave Bolton explicit instructions to call President Zelensky, who had just been elected, and tell him to meet with Giuliani to discuss these investigations that the president wanted. This raises so many questions. After hearing this news, can any senator say, now we don't need need to hear witnesses?
Well, apparently Senator Murkowski can't because she claims that there's no way to have a fair trial in the Senate, and so she's not voting for witnesses. I hope the citizens of Alaska hear that loud and clear and what a sham this is. I would say that in my personal capacity, it's shocking, absolutely shocking for these senators to, in essence, violate their duty to really to hear the evidence, to hear evidence that is obviously relevant, obviously germane to this this case, to refuse to hear it. It's like, you know, it's almost as if they have their fingers in their ears and they're just going, nah. They don't want that evidence to be seen. But really, when I'm saying that, it's not that they don't want to see the evidence, although perhaps maybe some of them don't. They don't want you to see the evidence. They don't want you, the American people, to see those witnesses, to hear from those witnesses. They don't want you to hear from Mick Mulvaney and hear him either lie or invoke the Fifth or evade. They don't want to hear John Bolton tell what he saw under oath or in the halls of the Senate. They don't want you, the American people, to see that. They want you to just get your news from, or your
Fox.
Fake news, really, in the truest sense, from Fox, and to believe the lies of the president's counsel, the president's lawyers.
Yeah, it's astounding. This is the opposite world, and I don't know. So it looks like they're coming back into session now. But so, Lisa, how do they, I mean, the news is going to come out. The New York Times had this. The book will eventually be released. And if it isn't, if the White House holds it up, I fully expect John Bolton, given what he's been doing, to go and do some kind of wide-ranging interviews and spill all. Can the Democrats then backtrack and say, call, you know, they're talking about if the Senate doesn't call Bolton, they might. Can they? Would they open a new impeachment proceeding? I mean, what happens next?
Well, we're in uncharted territory, quite frankly. We've never seen such lawlessness. I think that Richard Nixon in all of his, ranging maliciousness that's evidenced from the tapes that weren't expunged and erased, never probably even dreamed of this level of hostility, this level of just complete defiance of the Congress. Maybe he did. He just didn't even have the guts to try it.
Right.
Not that it takes guts. It really just takes an absolute contempt for the rule of law, total contempt for the United States Constitution, for the role of Congress, for the role of the Senate. So there's nothing that prevents the House from having these witnesses come and testify, although, of course, we continue to have the White House objecting without actually asserting executive privilege. So they would continue to play those games, especially now, as you pointed out at the beginning of this conversation, that they've packed the courts and stacked the courts with right-wing partisans who I don't trust to rule fairly in these cases. But the fact is that the American people deserve to know this information. They deserve to have this information under oath. They deserve the truth and not the lies of this administration, not the outright and abject obfuscation of the truth by the White House's counsel and by these senators on the Republican side who are like lemmings walking in lockstep because of Trump's fundraising and their fear of him and the cultish followers that he has accumulated through his completely, his incredible record of lying every single day.
Yeah, every
single day, multiple times.
Yeah, every time he opens his mouth, it's another lie. I mean, about even the most mundane things. I mean, he lies about big things. He lies about small things. You know, I feel a Dr. Seuss book coming on about lying.
And also just the contempt for the press, the completely ridiculous setup by Mike Pompeo,
yeah,
who certainly has aspirations of his own for the White House, let alone perhaps the Senate in Kansas. This is a man who is just another bully like the president. You know, we're left with just the bullies and the sycophants in this administration. I was thinking today when you look at who the White House counsel is, who the advisors are, you know, for example, his outside counsel who's been speaking before Congress, Jay Sekulow, and all I can think of is oil sticks together, it congeals, and this is a rancid oil
yes.
around this president.
It really is. So you got Sekulow, who, by the way, I saw a piece today in one of the papers that his office consists of like a post office box a few miles away from the White House, that there is no it just sounds shady as all get out, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But even more
the headline for the AP says charities steered $65 million to Trump lawyer Sekulow and his family.
Oh,
it's a family operation. What you see over and over with these guys is you know, Trump's secret, I guess, superpower, maybe not so secret, is that he can identify apparently the most corrupt person in the room and bond with them. It's just right. one corrupt person after another. He's like a magnet. It's like instead of being a magnet for good, he's a magnet for other power hungry, corrupt figures, people who either are, you know, are corrupt in like a moral sense. I'm not saying they've been convicted of a crime or charged with a crime. Perhaps some of them should. I can name a few that I think should be. But the fact is that he corrupts people who are the most venal,
right.
the most willing to subjugate themselves to him, to be proximate to his power. And he's such a shallow person, so willing to use the office of the presidency, that he's a steward of that office, to use it for his own personal gain, for his family's gain, for his political opportunism, and to advance his own really, I think, crooked agenda. Undermining the very rule of law, the fabric of this country.
Say what you really mean, Lisa. No, I couldn't agree more. But now let me ask you this. From the allegations made in the latest Bolton bombshell, that Pat Cipollone was in the room back in May when Donald Trump directed John Bolton to call Vladimir Zelensky and set up a meeting with Giuliani to talk about the investigations that Trump wanted. Pat Cipollone is the White House counsel, number one, which means we're paying him. He's not Donald Trump's attorney. He's the attorney for the office of the president, and he's representing Trump in this impeachment. Isn't that a violation on a bunch of different levels?
Well, it certainly seems like a conflict of interest. Apparently, Cipollone was put on notice a couple weeks ago that he could be called as a witness because he is a witness. And so you have this situation in which Trump has somehow tried to, in essence, insulate himself by having so many people involved in his conspiracy that everyone is implicated. And so everyone is sort of tied to him, bound to him, and none of them will step away from him. You know, there's a number of people who have left this administration, including the former White House counsel McGahn, mm-hmm. who, you know, I have quibbles with about a lot of things, but yep. who apparently had the good sense to get the hell out of there. Pat Cipollone is, you know, has been making a number of misstatements on the floor of the Senate, you know, deceptive, ridiculous claims that have been found to be untrue. You know, so I where does the buck stop? When you read the evidence that has been obtained in the House, in the House hearings, in the House Intelligence Committee and more, what you see is how broad this scheme has been by this president to use the money allocated by Congress through Congress's power of the purse to try to advance his own personal political agenda and to deploy both the government, his trusted lieutenants, people like Pompeo, people who were in that meeting that John Bolton mentioned, and his black market type of outside operatives to advance his agenda, people like Rudy Giuliani, mm-hmm. who has tried to use this both to advance the president's objectives and to line his own pockets. Why we're not seeing John Bolton testify in the Senate is because this is a scam, a sham that McConnell is conducting or pursuing in the Senate. Why don't we have Lev Parnas there?
Good question.
In the Senate testifying? This is all because this is the biggest cover-up in American history.
And yet you have Donald Trump calling the entire thing a sham and a hoax, but for an entirely different reason. He's actually right. It is a sham and a hoax because of the way the White House is blocking any witnesses, that's what they're talking about, witnesses and documents.
Yep.
The reason they're having this debate today and allegedly this vote later today is because the White House has disallowed everything. Now, Lisa, you mentioned you were a deputy assistant attorney general in the during Clinton's administration. Were you there during his impeachment?
I was, and it was, you know, really hard to read that Star report and see the stories of the evidence that they had obtained. You know, I remember at the time thinking, obviously, you can't lie under oath, which is one of the allegations against President Clinton in that impeachment. Lawyers can't do that. Ordinary people can't do that. There are consequences for doing that. And then I remember very distinctly going over to work for the United States Senate and seeing Senator McConnell lie in front of me on the floor of that Senate other meetings, lie just without any regard and lie with theatric ability. And I remember thinking between him and Lindsey Graham, who also I would see lie in the Senate and say things that were just false, to see these people who were at the head of impeaching Clinton for, quote, lying, be such liars was astonishing to me, because when I was a sort of a pup, in essence, a Justice Department lawyer, it just didn't occur to me that people would lie in that way or lie so freely, so willingly, so easily as I saw Senator McConnell lie when I was working in the Senate.
Oh, my God. Now, what about Lindsey Graham? Do you have any firsthand experience with Lindsey Graham? Because I have a piece of tape here that I'm going to play in just a moment. And it's from January 11th, 1999. In fact, I'll play it right now. And it's Lindsey Graham explaining why you can't have a trial without witnesses. I couldn't write this stuff if I tried. Right? Here we go.
Why do you need a witness? The whole point that we're trying to make is that in every trial that there has ever been in the Senate regarding impeachment, witnesses were called. So what I'm saying about witnesses is that if you take them off the table in the Senate, the next Judiciary Committee, the next independent counsel ought to do everything, because they may lose the chance to present their case. That would be bad for impeachment law. That would be against precedent. And I hope that doesn't happen here. And you can have 3 days of lawyers talking to each other on both sides, 16 hours of questions, and basically bore everybody to death, talk everybody to death. But when you have a witness who was there, who was engaged in it, who was in the middle of it, telling you about what they were doing and why, it's a totally different case. And it's the difference between getting the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I'm just asking every senator to vote your conscience. We will live with the rules because it is your show. But make sure when it's over, there's a meaningful trial, and we don't change the law of impeachment because of the political moment. I think the Republican Party and the nation stand to lose if this trial doesn't get to the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. The best thing for this nation is get this over with, but not at the sake of doing it in a way that won't make sense, not for the sake of cutting corners, not to get it behind us on any terms, get it behind us on terms of honor. I can live with the verdict of the United States Senate, no matter what it is. I only ask that we get a chance to make a persuasive case, the president be able to defend himself, and at the end of the day, it's a meaningful trial.
So it's just absolutely stunning in the hypocrisy of it. Is that something that the House managers could play? I know they've played video. Does it have to be evidence that's been introduced in the House hearings?
Well, you know, there are a whole other set of rules in the Senate in terms of how the senators talk about each other or refer to each other.
Right.
That's a separate set of decorum rules. But on the merits of this, the fact is that that's exactly, Lindsey Graham was speaking the truth, in essence, in that audio. He's done a 180 since then. He's betrayed, you know, all of the things, in essence, that he said that he stood for before. Since John McCain passed away, it's like whatever little good angel whispering in his ear is gone. He's become a complete Trumpster and Trump defender and attacker without any limit. In fact, the reality is the undeniable, you know, irrefutable history is that the United States Senate had two prior impeachment trials against United States presidents, Bill Clinton and Andrew Johnson. And the Senate heard from testimony from witnesses in both of the prior impeachment trials. People may or may not recall that during the Clinton impeachment trial in the Senate, Monica Lewinsky testified.
Yes, she did.
Those aren't the only impeachments that the Senate has heard. The Senate has had other impeachments. There's no impeachment trial in Senate history that has had no witnesses until now, because this is the biggest cover-up ever conducted, sort of in plain view, but the biggest cover-up in American history. Those senators on the Republican side, Senator McConnell and his allies who have voted against having witnesses or vote or said to vote against having witnesses, should be ashamed of themselves. I hope the American people hold them accountable for as long as it takes to make them accountable.
You and me both. Lisa Graves, I can't thank you enough for speaking to us after your vow of silence for a week now. I'm so glad you're feeling better. Are we going to see you on MSNBC? Is Lawrence O'Donnell itching to have you back on as well?
Oh, they've been really lovely, but I have had no voice for 3 weeks. And as you can tell, I have only half a voice right now. So I'm not sure, but I'm certainly happy to be on your show, Nicole, anytime. And other shows as well. I probably will write about this ultimately, but I've been captivated by the spectacle, the travesty, and these are dark days for our republic. I hope that we can regain our democracy after this debacle, but it's going to take every single one of us and everyone we know to really move forward and put this chapter, close this chapter in our history and consign these people to the waste bin of history where they belong.
Very well said. Lisa Graves, I hope you don't mind. We have no idea what's going to happen. At the beginning of the day today, we thought it would all wrap up sometime tonight. Now there's talk. They're talking about recessing after tonight and coming back on Wednesday for the final vote. It's all up in the air. We don't know, but I hope in the end I can call on you again for a postscript of what we saw and what we do now.
Anytime, Nicole. Thank you for all you're doing to get the truth out to people.
Oh, you're the best. Thank you so much, Lisa Graves.
Thanks.
To you soon. Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye. She really is. Lisa Graves. Follow her on Twitter, @TheLisaGraves, or if you happen to be a Facebook person, she's also very active on Facebook. Her brilliance, I just so appreciate her expertise. Again, her resume is just remarkable, and I'm so glad she's on our side. All right. With that, it's a weekend. Monday, the Iowa caucuses. Tuesday, the State of the Union. Wednesday, they vote on impeachment? I don't know. Check back over the weekend because I'm sure I'll update with special editions of What's News or at least something. As it goes along, we'll try to keep you informed. Thanks for listening, everyone. Good luck to us all.